I went down to Columbus maybe last weekend, a couple weekends now ago, and I ran into Steven again. I hadn't seen him in a while, probably since Colorado. And I kind of chatted with him and I messaged him here. See, I wanted to hear a little bit about these new composite boats you've been going on about. So, what do you got going on down there, man?
Well, we're going to be building carbon composite rock stars down here in Columbus, Georgia. I have Mason Hargrove helping me out,
Oh,
and
Mason's awesome. Yeah.
he is so stoked to be helping with this. And then my girlfriend Rachel's my accountant, which is
Okay.
awesome. We've got like an official business LLC formed. We've got a bank account. We've got a logo. We've got a U.S. Coast Guard manufacturing our ID number.
Okay. Yep. You need
And
those.
we've got a shop set up on up by the put in. It's actually
Okay.
an old, really old studio apartment building that some people are letting me use. It's like the top floor. I don't think anyone's lived in it for 5 to 10 years. It was a little gross, but we've cleaned it out now, and
Yeah.
it's very functional. We're actually working on boats already.
And yeah, so what this is you're not designing a new boat. You're taking the current Rockstar 5, I take it, or is this any Rockstar?
No, it's the Rockstar 5. And for me, I don't feel like I need to design a new boat because I've been leading our design team meetings for the last sort of three boats Jackson Kayak has
Okay.
done. And so the Rockstar V is like exactly the boat I would design. Like if I
Hear
had the
you.
opportunity to make a brand new boat and then make it out of carbon, I honestly don't even know what I would do different. Like we've got the boat
Yeah.
I want.
Is it currently available on carbon, by the way? Like
Yeah, so we've
you
got.
guys, Murky Waters, right? Didn't you work with those guys?
Yeah, and so Murky is still making them. They have gotten a couple boats out the door, but and their boats are awesome. Like anyone who wants a boat, definitely Murky Waters
Yeah.
is a great place to go for boats. And he's going to be able to do sort of custom chops if you want the boat a little bigger, or slice your
Okay.
bow or whatever. And he can do super cool graphics. He's been just a little slow getting them out the door due to a lot of things going on in his
Yeah.
world, but he's gotten a few out now, and I think they're going to keep coming. And then we have a guy in England that is just now starting to build them as well, called Hobson,
Okay.
and his boats are going to be really nice as well. So between them and then Dream Boats, all of a sudden it should be a lot easier for people to get a Rockstar V and carbon composite if they want.
Now, are you offering, the small, medium, large?
Yeah, so I'm going to start out with the small and the medium. We are
Okay.
building the molds for both of those at the same time right now.
Okay.
And then probably next winter, I'm planning to build the mold for the large.
Okay.
Just because there's just not as many people who buy
Yeah.
large play boats.
Now.
And I've got a laundry list of people who want the smalls and the mediums right now. So
Okay.
I figured just get the first 10 boats out the door and then go from there.
Now, when you say build a mold, are you pulling off of a existing kayak, like a roto-molded kayak, or are you using the plug?
No, we take a roto-molded plastic boat, and then we have to do a lot of things to kind of prepare the boat to build a mold around it.
Okay.
The reason for that is because the CNC plug that would get made to use the to make an aluminum kayak, an aluminum mold like at Jackson Kayak or any other brands, that plug is solid, and whenever you make an aluminum mold off of it, that aluminum is going to cure to a very slightly different shape. And then, as the plastic boat is molded, roto molded, as it cools, it shrinks. And it doesn't
Yeah.
shrink in like a uniform way. So they get smaller and more in some ways than others.
Yeah.
And so we learned the hard way a while ago at Jackson Kayak that if you take the exact plug shape, it's not the same boat as the production boat that you're
That's
going to
true.
like get in plastic. And so we plan when we do the actual plugs and CAD work, we plan for the shrinkage that we know happens in a specific way.
Yeah,
So
usually it was 2 to 5%, and it obviously depended on model when we was doing that at Dagger. You had to kind of, I know exactly the struggles of that. You might pull a plug off of a mold, but it could be pretty different boat by the time you get to the aluminum tool and then you run it in plastic. There could be a 2 to 5% difference. And that's what I wanted to get at. So doing it off of an actual, just a Rockstar 5 mole, I mean, kayak, you're pulling it off of that. What is, would that make it slightly larger by?
It should be in theory exactly the same, because okay, if you figure the outside of the plastic boat is a set size, right?
Yeah.
And I'm building the mold around that. And then the mold, the inside edge of that mold will be exactly the same as the outside edge of the plastic boat. And then when I build the composite carbon boat inside of that mold, it's now exactly the same as the plastic boat it came off of.
Yep, I get what you're saying. How are you seaming them?
So I'm going to build these all in one piece. So there won't necessarily be a seam line. They're going to be
like a roto-molded boat. It won't have a seam at all, you're saying?
Yes. So I'm doing a process called resin infusion, where you can you basically lay up the fabric dry.
Okay.
And the nice thing with it is when you're doing a wet layup or traditional vacuum bag, you're kind of like on the clock the second you start working, yep, because that resin is going to start
kicking off,
solidifying at some point. And you can get really slow resin to make it easier, but the more complex, the more layers, all of a sudden, unless you're really fast or have helpers, that's the challenge with that style. With infusion, there's other challenges, but I basically, you get to put all the layers in dry and you use this like tacky spray that dissolves when it hits epoxy.
Okay.
And that holds all of the fabric into exactly the right shape around the boat. And you take your time and get it all right. And then you put the whole thing under vacuum and you've got these like epoxy ports that go in through the vacuum bag.
Okay.
And you use these fancy things called like flow media and all kinds of things to direct so that the epoxy then will sort of saturate all of it exactly the way you want. And
is it under a vacuum the whole time?
Yeah. So after you put all the cloth in, you put the vacuum bag in, you seal it all up, and I'm going to put my two halves of the mold together. There's going to be some layers from the deck are going to overlap the hull, to basically create kind of a seam, but it's all going to be molecularly and chemically in one part because it all gets infused at once. And so it'll be lighter and stronger that way. And other companies have done this. This is not something that's like, this has been done before.
I'm familiar somewhat, mostly with mold layups. We do composite mold layups. I've done that more than anything, but I've never actually done like any type of actual layup of a kayak like that. But, I've seen it, I've seen the process and I'm familiar enough with it. Could I explain it? Probably not. That's where you come in, but
that's like, okay.
I understand it.
Once I'm building some boats, you should come down and check it out.
I would love that, man. Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Infusion's crazy. Like it's all dry and you get under vacuum and the amount of force in this vacuum is like insane.
Are you using just a shop vac? What are you using for vacuum? Did you buy a pump?
You use these high-end vacuum pumps.
Okay.
And they vacuum can be measured in a couple different ways, but one of them is inches of mercury. And all you need to know about that is 30 inches of mercury is a perfect vacuum, like you're in outer space, right? There's no molecules of air at all. Mm-hmm. These vacuum pumps will get this bag pulled down so hard that the gauge will read like 29.9 inches of mercury. Like it's insane.
What is the bag made out of? Is it a very tough material?
It's just a little bit like a plastic, almost imagine like a heavy duty plastic trash bag, but it's see-through and it's made specifically to be able to be sealed and elongate. So it'll match all the contours.
I was just wondering about like a bag holding that type of vacuum. Would you blow a hole in it?
And it's insane the way somehow it just gets spread out so evenly with this special bagging material that it can take a ton of force, but not actually break.
Wow.
It's easy to puncture, but it's not easy to like rip it apart, I guess is probably the best way to describe it. But the cool thing is like, so that vacuum goes in there, you check and make sure it doesn't leak. Mm-hmm. And then you've got these tubes that go into ports through the bag that go into like your bucket of resin. And I'll be using epoxy. And so once you're sure there's no leaks, you just open the valves And you can watch as the cloth sort of slowly turns dark and saturates out from those
Wow.
ports. And so, like, for a full kayak over, I don't know, half an hour or whatever, you're just going to watch the epoxy kind of spread through the whole thing and
Is
saturate all that
the
cloth.
epoxy, is that resin? Is that what that is when you're saying epoxy? Are you kicking it off then with like a catalyst when you do that, or is it already got it pre-mixed?
So you have to mix it in advance.
Okay.
So it'll come, whether you're working with vinyl ester or polyester or epoxy or whatever, you're going to get two parts, like two liquids, and you have to measure them
Yeah.
and mix them together. And you can get them so they're set up for like kicking off really fast or really slow. You can get them so they're really, really, and for infusion, you want it to be really, really thin, runny liquid. You don't want it to be very thick because it's got to get like pulled through all that cloth. So you get special infusion stuff. But then once it's pulled all the way through, you just turn off those valves and kind of like leave it under vacuum. And it's like pulling insane force on the whole thing.
How
And
long
then
do you leave it under the vacuum?
until it's pretty solid.
Which
So you probably
would it?
leave the vacuum on for maybe another hour or two until you're sure that it's done like the main
Before
kick.
you take it out of the bag.
Then you probably let it sit, depending on the epoxy you're using, for like another several hours, like probably overnight.
Okay.
And then some epoxies, like the stuff I'm working with, will be actually better and stronger and stiffer if you then, after that initial cure, heat it to like 120 degrees for a
That was
couple
my next
hours.
question. If you just put a some sort of like, do you just put a space heater in there or something and try to regulate it, or do you have a
Yeah, there's a lot of ways you could do it, but literally, if
yeah.
it was a hot sunny day, you could probably just stick it out in the sun and take like a little thermal gun, and it would hit 120 degrees no
Oh,
problem for 2 hours.
okay.
Or indoors, you can do. It's funny, a lot of the if in like composite work is just figuring out really simple solutions for weird problems, like.
Yeah,
How do
you.
I heat a boat? Well, you
Yeah.
could turn it upside down and then like just aim a little space heater into the cockpit rim and then the entire boat collects all the heat.
Yeah, because you've been laying up like your own boats for a while, from squirt boats to your own like play boats, right? Or.
Mostly I've just done seaming and cutting squirt boats.
Okay.
And then
Yeah.
I've helped at Murky just in like to lay up a couple boats, but not that many.
Yeah. What is your actual layup as far as carbon, Kevlar, fiberglass? How many like layers? Or you have a Negra in there also?
there's a lot of different ways to do it, and cloths come in a whole lot of different weights and weaves and things like that. And I'm going to do definitely a couple of test boats before I'm sure that I've got what I wanted. But the backbone of what I'm doing, which is really neat stuff, is this company called Vector Ply is literally right down the road. They're 5 minutes from Goodwave,
No,
and
wow, they're
they
in Georgia. They're in the Columbus area.
Yeah, they're in
Yeah.
Phenix City, Alabama, and
I
they
know exactly where Phoenix City is.
and they actually make the fabrics that the number one paddle manufacturer in the United States uses. I'm probably not supposed to use their name. And they make the fabrics that a
Warner.
lot of high-end snowboard companies use, and they make fabrics for yacht building and all kinds of
Yeah.
things. And one of their engineers is actually a whitewater kayaker,
Oh, nice.
and they have this cool program where you can I gave them the CAD file of the rock star and they like upload it into their computer and then they can enter different layups with their fabrics into this computer and it will tell you how heavy it's going to be, how stiff different pieces are going to be, and then in general how much you're going to pay for the
Like,
fabric per
and
boat.
it'll show you where your thicknesses need to be and all that. Is that
It can
like it?
guess that stuff. It'll guess like kind of where the stress points they talk about in terms of like deflection points and all kinds of things. The big thing is they can estimate weight and stiffness. And
Nice.
so they can say if you use foam core at a quarter inch with three layers of this fabric, it's going to be this stiff. It's going to be this heavy. You know, if you use And so anyway, the engineering guy was able to help me out. His name's Thomas, by dividing the boat into a couple of different sections of it that I was, where I'm going to have different layers basically and setups. And then he could enter different amounts of cloth or different kinds of cloth. And so once we kind of did that, we tested two or three different fabrics that they make. Some of them had a negra and carbon. Some of them were just carbon. Some of them had some other things. And eventually we landed on this stuff that is just super cool. Like I just posted a little video.
I just seen your, seen your Instagram story. Yeah.
And that last, like all of those things, we literally beat with a sledgehammer. We like, I put them on a curb and stomped on them. And then I like flexed the heck out of them to see like just how they would do. And this stuff I settled on, I probably hit it 10 times with a sledgehammer, like as hard as I can on carpet. So everything can actually flex around it. It wasn't just on ground.
Yeah, concrete. Yeah.
And it actually like punctured it in one spot, but I could still bend it almost in like half and it doesn't work. And it's the second we started testing that stuff and really landed on this is the best stuff, then I decided this is the way to go. And it's what makes it so cool is that it's and what that means is like when you think of carbon fiber, you're imagining something like in your paddle, it's like a woven, it looks almost like a black grid pattern. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you've got layers of threads like going, weaving in and out of each other. And it looks just like regular cloth, right? That creates little ridges and valleys. And so you can make it stronger by doing what's called a non-crimp fabric. And so let's say you took your standard carbon, which has half the threads going at 90 degrees.
It's usually like that. It's like,
And then instead of weaving them, you just put flat layers of those fibers going one way, and then underneath it, flat layers of those fibers going the other way, and then did like a light stitch to hold it all together. All of a sudden, you've got what's called a non-crimp fabric or a non-woven or stitch fabric. And that stuff is 30% stronger by weight than the wovens. And so the fabric that I've gotten is actually, it has fibers running at 0 degrees, 90 degrees, 45 and minus 45 degrees, all in one cloth. So it's really strong and really
this
stiff.
Isn't multiple layers. You're saying one cloth has all of that multiple layers laid up is what you're saying.
Yeah. And that's so that makes it really strong and really stiff in all directions, basically.
Man, that's awesome. What are you using for outfitting? Like how are you outfitting it?
So I'm getting my outfitting direct from Jackson Kayak. So they're going to come with the Jackson Kayak back band, the normal hip pads, the bee's knees, the foot block.
What about the seat track and the seat and all that? Is that going to be plastic?
No, that'll be, it won't need a seat track to support the seat because the hull will be stiff enough on its own. I'll be making just foam seats that you can sit on because they're nice and light and not too hard to make.
Well, yeah, and I guess you could throw in your own, like, beads, the happy
Yeah,
seat,
you could
right?
do it, the sweet cheeks or whatever.
Would that come with it, the sweet cheeks? Are you doing
that? Won't come with it.
What about hip pads and all that? Is with composite boats, is that something that a lot of people kind of outfit themselves anyway?
Yeah. However, the nice thing with the Jackson ones is that the Jackson standard outfitting kit's really quick and easy to adjust, and so there's not a whole lot of, like, you know, with the back band and the bee's knees and the regular hip pads, it's and the regular bulkhead, like there's a whole lot that needs to be done.
So I take it you'll also be painting these. You have a little spray booth?
Yeah, so we'll be doing for now just like single color deck, single color hull, and then if people want fancy graphics, they'll need to get like a vinyl wrap or something. Which goes real well on these, but it takes quite a bit of experience and time to do fancy custom graphics that I just I don't have time to do. I still want to go kayak every day.
Yeah.
I want to make like the lightest, strongest boats I can make. I want them to look good. But yeah. If you want custom graphics, you're going to need to get final. Cause you can print those yourself.
Now, and this is, it's Jackson. Is this part of Jackson, or can you do any kayak? Are you only doing the Rockstar 5 right now?
I could do any kayak. This is my business.
Okay. This is something separate from Jackson, but
yes, I'm licensed by Jackson Kayak to make the Rockstars.
Okay.
And so at some point I'll be paying royalties on everyone that I make.
Yeah.
And so
I was just wondering that because you're using your existing boat. I mean, technically, I mean, I could bring you any type of kayak and you could do you could pull a glass off of it technically, right?
You could. It'd be much easier with a new one. So like Jackson Kayak has
with no
made
scratches.
Sure that, yeah. That, and cause they start to warp over time and like, so they scratch, they dent, all that stuff is, it's hard to get a good shape out of a really used plastic boat. So I've got new boats that came from Jackson Kayak that we're using to make our molds.
And I take it because one thing is are you putting the cockpit on last? Because you can't really pull an undercut, right, when you're pulling off of your boat?
You can't. However, Ed at Murky Waters figured out how to mold a 3D normal shape cockpit rim as part of the main layup. And he was kind enough to share what he's doing with me.
Okay.
And then I've kind of modified it a little bit. And so I'm going to be doing a normal cockpit rim that's built into the main layup.
Will it be a cockpit rim similar to like in a current Jackson boat with the kind of round? So it won't just be that like a slalom boat that's straight out. Okay. Cause nope. That's always seemed to be the struggle with making those boats. Right. I mean, just like
that's one of them.
Yeah. Well, there's many of them. I get it. What is, well, man, that's awesome. How will people be able, I mean, if you don't mind me asking, have you thought of the price and everything that you're going to be doing on these for like a so it'd be a Rockstar 5, medium, your normal layup, nothing special, just your normal layup. What would that run me as a consumer?
That's going to run you $3,000.
Okay.
And you probably to order, you'll probably have to put down $1,000 deposit. And
that makes
then
sense. That way you're not. Yeah, I get that.
Man, it's great. Like the amount of money that has to go out, like cash flow stuff, like to buy this roll of carbon fiber, this magic stuff that I just picked up.
I spent like
$6,000
of your own money.
It's ridiculous. That's just like tip of the iceberg. I'm going to try to make the standard layup just like as light and epic as possible. And then I'll probably also offer like a stakeout layup, like a really burly, cause big waves,
those
really
big, those big boats. Jumps and pops.
And that'll probably come with a full extra layer of this stuff. And so that'll probably have to cost like an extra couple $100 just because
makes sense.
The cost is expensive.
Well, just tell me exactly, you know, what the advantage of having a carbon like boat out there, say like in a rodeo. So you're in a competition. What's your advantage of a carbon over a plastic, your normal roto molded clay? Like, why would I want to say like, wow, this is that much better?
I think what you would find, anyone who's paddled a composite kayak of any kind, whether it's a slalom boat or a river runner or a playboat, is immediately going to notice a difference. They're just like, they're so much lighter. When I get in a composite playboat, in literally the first three forward strokes in flat water, I can feel that the boat is lighter and moving farther every stroke. It just takes half the energy to get the boat to move in every direction. So even if I was never to do a freestyle competition ever again, every single day paddling is going to be more fun because it's like having a mountain bike made of aluminum versus the carbon fiber mountain bike. It's like the same thing. Like the boat just weighs so much less. And so when you're surfing, in addition to it being lighter and faster and easier to just like flick, it becomes retentive as though you plus the boat weighs less. It paddles like you're a lighter paddler.
Yeah.
because let's say a rock star in plastic weighs, I don't know, 31 pounds. If you get a rock star in carbon fiber that weighs 17 pounds, all of a sudden that's like 14 pounds lighter. And so that means that my medium, if I weigh 150 pounds, it's going to float as though I only weighed 136 pounds.
Yeah.
And so I get that much more air and speed and retentiveness, and it's easier to throw around even in the flat water because it weighs less. And then the stiffness of the hull, especially if you're surfing, means that like the, I found that on a wave, I get a full extra bounce every single pass when I'm in a carbon boat compared to plastic. Like the plastic boats will absorb one full bounce every trip down the wave face.
Wow. Well, there you go. Do you always compete in a composite boat when the rodeos come?
You know, we haven't had them. So we've been competing in these plastic boats ever since the Rockstar 5 came out. And almost everybody who paddles a Jackson boat in a freestyle competition has just immediately switched to the Rockstar V, because quite frankly, the Rockstar V in plastic is just such a better shape than any other boat we had made yet, that it was more fun even than my carbon Rockstar 4. And almost everybody switched to the plastic ones, they had older plastic boats. And I mean, you know, you got out of your bubble and tried a spud boat while you were here. You tried the Rockstar V.
It's so good. I've paddled it to NOC Wave, and you know, I've always liked, I've paddled a Rockstar 4, which brings me to my next question. What is kind of like the design process, since you're kind of on the design team?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Up that, especially with these playboats like this, what is kind of like Jackson's philosophy on like designing a boat? Could you walk us through kind of like what would be a typical like playboat? Say I've got the Rockstar 4, what do you think of for the Rockstar 5?
That's a good question. Let me ask you first, what was your experience? What do you think the 5 did? How did it paddle for you?
Well, I paddled the 4 a lot more because I came out of the Jitsu. So the Jitsu and the Rockstar 4 for me were both bigger volume. I love a big volume boat because I'm more of a hole style type player. This was, you know, before, you know, Good Wave and all that. I love the pop of the 4, but it wasn't as loose as far as it spins. And then I got into the 5, and especially there at Good Wave, the way that thing released and spun so fast was very impressive. I found that when I would get it on its edge, it wouldn't slip. So what I had noticed Jackson had done was put this cutout in the sidewall. And my theory was on that, you might correct me if I was wrong, it was helping hold me in line for like a blunt, where some boats would break off right there. And I don't know if it was more placebo in my head, but I felt like it was very well controlled. I'd never been in a kayak so balanced and well controlled in a chaotic environment like that, like Good Wave or something. It makes you wonder, how big a wave could you get this on and feel comfortable? You know, the bigger you, I want to be on one of those big massive waves I see people posting from, you know, Alaska or Canada or Zambezi or somewhere, where you're like, whoa, I'd love to get down in those. And it just felt very, I think you guys figured out how to make the perfect kind of like wave style boat. Now, in a hole, I felt it lacked a little bit on its pop coming from the 4 or the Jitsu. For me, I'm only talking about for me. I mean, you might have a different experience with it, but it's like I felt the pop was a little less on it than its actual whippiness in the wave. And I felt like blunts and Pan Ams were beautiful. I'm not that big of a wave player, but it made me want a Rockstar Almost instantly, I came up and I told Q there. I was like, man, I just want to keep this. It was Casey's boat. I was like, I almost want to keep this. And I was like, I see the appeal that Steven's here in Columbus. So that's kind of like my initial thoughts of the Rockstar Five right there.
No, that's awesome. That matches a lot of what we were trying to do. Like we've made a lot of playboats over the years and
a lot of playboats
and some of them were kind of a reaction to the boat before it, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Like when we made the 2016 Rockstar, for example.
When was the first one? What was Rockstar 14? Was it 15?
The 12. And then there were some All-Stars in there too.
I remember the All-Stars, but then what was the first Rockstar? Do you remember the year that came out?
Yeah, that was a 2012.
Okay.
The boat may have come out in late 2011, but we called it a 2012 model. But like the 16, for example, was the sliciest. And that was made with the idea that it'd be the easiest to get vertical in the flat water and like link tricks in a hole.
Was that the number two?
That was the number three.
Okay.
And then we had some people who couldn't fit in them and who wanted a little more volume. And so the four was kind of a reaction to that. Let's make a boat. Yeah. That's like kind of almost a medium large.
Yeah.
With real high knees, a lot of volume. And then eventually we kind of found that we lost something in kind of making a reaction to the one before it, that there were some things that the four did really well, but we actually lost some things from the earlier boat. And so with the V, the goal was we want to make a boat that's actually better at everything than any playboat we've ever made before. And so with that end, at some point in the design process, we actually went back and tried every single Rockstar plus a 2010 All-Star in waves and holes.
That's awesome.
And then compared notes. And our design team is really fun. Our lead designer is David Knight, who designed every Jackson kayak. He does the actual computer CAD shaping. Mm-hmm. We've had Tony Lee in-house.
I used to work for Tony Lee. Yeah.
Yeah. He shapes the physical plugs.
Yeah.
And then we have, Emily Jackson's kind of in charge of everything whitewater. And then I lead the meetings not because I'm better at knowing what we should do, but just because I'm good at leading meetings and keeping a lot of people on track. Because as you can imagine, the rest of the team is like Dane, Nick, and Clay. And so everyone's got a lot of big ideas. it's a challenge to keep.
Ideas are easy. You know what? Yeah. Somebody told me an engineer is like, oh, ideas are easy. We can write them down all day. It's getting to do them is where, when you have to actually sit down and start doing the boats. Well, that's awesome. So what is it? It's you, Clay, Dane, and Nick are pretty much the premier. And I know the Jackson team, the freestyle team's pretty large. So you could get feedback from a lot of people, but are you guys the kind of like the four main players?
Yeah, and then Emily is like the big boss.
Okay.
And she's great. She's awesome. And then with the V, we were like, we want to make sure that this boat's actually better than everything we've done before. So when we went back and tried all the old boats, it was kind of eye-opening because Clay had actually gone back and forth a lot over the last several years, but Dane had never paddled one of the older boats.
Once he gets in a new one, he's not going back. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in some way, I think Nick was the same way. And I had not really gone back very often, but I was open to the fact that some of the older boats might have done some things that the newer ones didn't. And it was amazing. Like when we compared notes on trying them all, we were all in agreement that when it came to like being on a wave, we all liked the same boats best. It was the 2014 Rockstar and it was like the 2010 All-Star. And when it came to like throwing it around in the flat water and being able to boss it around for the high-end hole tricks, we all actually really liked the 2016, that smallest Rockstar. We were like, it's so easy to throw around and like beginners can double pump it in the flat water and learn to do everything. And then when it came to like the four, everyone really liked having that extra volume and higher knees and extra leg room. And so it was like, eventually we settled on, let's make sure that the boat we're working on kind of starts with those best qualities, and then we'll tweak the shape from there. And we'll, I had experimented with putting the double rails on both the Rockstar 4 and on a 2014. It made both of them better.
Yeah.
And so, like, well, let's add that plus a bunch of other fun things to make the boats better. And so
once what we was, kind of, what was the initial concept of putting that cutout coming down the sidewall? You know, you have your parting line here. It's got a cutout that kind of it's like a, is that a concave or convex? What it kind of goes in along the sidewall. What was the original concept behind that? I had not seen that on any other rock stars. Maybe I'm wrong. No. Has that been on any other rock stars?
That hasn't. And that was that does a couple things. Number one, it will actually kind of like provide a little stopping power if the boat's way on edge. But the main thing it does is it builds structural rigidity into the sidewall. And so you don't really think about it, but any shape that's got like a real vertical sidewall shape becomes very, very flexible. Mm-hmm. Like your hull is pretty flat. And the only reason it's not really, really flexible in almost any flat hull kayak is you've got that big walls and seat track down there. If you take a flat shape on the sidewall, it becomes really flexible. And so by adding like a convexity in there,
so it stiffens it up. You're saying on your hops, it would flex along that sidewall and lose your energy. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Or just landing on your side or like you could, like we had people, we had people learning how to tomahawk off of rocks or whatever. And if you come down, you don't make it all the way around and you come down even from 5 feet up on your side, you could feel a sidewall like cave in under your leg, and then it flexes right back out. Like it doesn't actually damage the boat. It just like flexes in, you know?
Yeah. And you would really feel that on a big, like stout wave. You would feel if you jumped and landed on you hopped and landed on it. I could see that. So added more like making it more rigid. I felt it did kind of help hold the boat sometimes and keep the sidewall from slipping. I don't know.
Yeah, and that also has to do with the two drop chine rails.
I could see that.
Because those things do a bunch of cool things, but one of those is that when you dig them in, you've got two little rails grabbing water and sending it one way or another. And the other thing that does is it, when you dig it in and go to switch edges into that blunt that you described, it gives more lift and like pushes that edge back out to let it go loose on that blunt.
Yeah.
But the other thing that really does, what most people don't understand, is that those edges, more than making the boat carve, what they're doing is causing the boat to plane with less drag. Because when you're on plane, when the boat's skipping faster than the water, what you really don't want is for the boat to like drag water with it. Because what that does is slows the boat down, kind of makes it squat and gets dragged up. Same thing when you're like skipping out, coming up across a hole or a big boof, right? Like some boats will really plane up and carry speed out of those skip outs across cross currents and stuff. And some kind of just sort of squat in and mush a little more. What those drop chines do, those rails, is when the water's flying under the boat, the water gets pulled up into those little channels and pushed down away from the hull. And then the second rail is there to catch any water that makes it up past the first one and sends it down and away from the hull. And so if you watch video of a rock star surfing, you're going to see the water coming off of the front, wherever the front of the boat's surfing, the water is actually going down and out away from the boat, and it's lifting the hull up.
Is it because it's adding turbulence or like air or something under there? What's it doing?
It's really just pushing the water down, and that makes the whole thing lift up.
Have you put this on any type of fluid dynamics type program, or is this just more kind of like
we didn't, but the thing to know is like, David Knight, like our lead designer, designed ships for the Navy.
Yeah, he's been around years. Since 1980s, like right?
Doing yeah, he understands and, yeah. what makes things plane. Yeah. And what he would tell you would be that the, like kind of the, the crown jewel, like the golden bullet of planing, would be something like a skimboard. You know those little things you run towards the ocean?
And the waves. You don't get them in thick water about that much.
Yeah,
usually bust my ass everywhere when I'm trying to use those, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
That thing planes like nothing else. And the reason is because it's pretty small, so there's not much surface area for it to drag
it's
water.
Like an oval though, right?
Yeah. And there's no rocker at all. Mm-mm. And it's almost like a flat skipping stone. Mm-hmm. Like it skips over the like surface and the water barely knows it's there, right? The problem is with a kayak, you can't have it totally flat and you can't have it super thin, because then it wouldn't be a kayak. It would sink, the ends would catch, you wouldn't be able to do tricks, you wouldn't be able to paddle, it would be terrible.
Yeah.
So unfortunately for planing, the boats have to have rocker, they have to be thick, they have to be like all kinds of shapes that create drag. And so those drop chines, those double rails, a lot of what that does is overcoming that drag by pushing the water away from the boat while you're planing up.
Yeah.
And so like you would notice in even a creek boat or an Antix or River Runner, even when you're not surfing, when you're skipping across cross currents, let's say you were to catch the eddy at Gorilla after the notch, you boof right and you're going into the eddy.
Yeah.
Instead of running it direct. If you have a boat with reasonable drop chines, that boat, when it hits the current, is going to lift up. And because it lifts up, it's going to carry speed and it's going to be loose while it's lifted up. It's going to be easy to turn. So those boats that do that real well, people like that they're easy to correct, but sometimes they're like, oh man, that boat just spun out on my landing. Yeah. Because the challenge is when it lifts up and gets all loose, you have to control it. Otherwise, it doesn't necessarily just keep going in a straight line.
That makes sense. I've seen that. It's happened to me, and I've seen it happen a lot. People have come out, and they've not done anything. They've just let the boat go, and then it's eddied out for them, or it's caught an edge and then turned and burned into things where they've not controlled it, like having those chunks.
And what you'd find is like, a longer waterline boat with no drop chines is going to sink in and carry speed forward, but that's also going to make it harder to control if it gets a little offline.
Yeah.
Like it's just going to take off way easier. Whereas the boat that planes up and is looser feeling requires a little bit of effort to make it go where you want, but then you can really control it. Whereas the longer water line with no drop chines is just going to like plow in the direction it's going, or a cross current is going to be more likely to railroad it.
Are you back on the designing? So do you guys prototype at all, or do you go straight from CAD? Do you find something in a CAD and then just go straight to mold maker?
No, we definitely prototype. So we do the process is we send surveys to the team, to our dealers. We talk to everybody. Then like our little whitewater leadership group gets together and has a meeting and argues, and it's fun.
You guys actually pull a prototype per size or just one size?
Just one size.
Yes.
And then the boats are scaled from there. But once we decide what boat we want to make and what we want it to do, we write that up, we tell the whole company, we give that to David Knight and Tony Lee, and we're like, we really want this boat to do these things. And then we think we want it to be about this long, maybe vaguely this much volume.
Yeah.
Here's what it needs to do well. And then generally David would start giving us CAD files of like a hull pretty quick, within a week or two. And then the team would then meet again and look at that CAD file shape and be like, oh, I don't know. And it looks weird. If you ever see a hull with no deck, I don't know what the heck that's going to do. So
looks like a hat.
But he'll kind of like overlay it over other boats we've made, so you can kind of see the changes. And then oftentimes, like with the Rockstar V, we went through 5 CADs that were just hulls. And then he started putting decks on them. And every time we would have like an hour long meeting and discuss what we thought it was going to do.
Yeah.
And then we went through like another 4 or 5 prototypes as we were putting the deck on it. And then we made a prototype, like a physical prototype, once we were all pretty sure it was going to be good. And unfortunately, the physical prototype, the first boat, was really not what we wanted. We were so sure it was going to be great, and it was not good.
The first, so the first like prototype. And do you guys do composite tooling, where you just make a composite tool off a like a foam CNC plug, and then we run
Yeah. So we have the plug CNC'd, and then we make a fiberglass mold that we can mold like a handful of plastic boats out of. And the plastic prototypes are going to be heavy. The shape isn't exactly right.
Yeah, I've paddled usually, a lot of those.
They're ugly. Sometimes the cockpit rims are welded on, so they leak. But you can really tell the shape. And so then after that first prototype, we were like, man, that was not right. And that was when we went back and literally tried all the old boats again. It was like, let's like kind of hit reset. And then we did that whole process again.
But
you know, with some of the things we learned from that first prototype and another prototype. And then once we tried that prototype, it was like, game on, this is the boat.
Yeah, the prototype kind of gave you like a good starting point to what, like what we want to keep and what you want to get rid of, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And like,
how many times did you prototype the V?
We just did two physical prototypes, but like I said, there were probably at least a dozen CAD prototypes that we like discuss in meetings and then tweak. And it's funny when you test them, like we're testing all these things, we're hoping no one can see us.
Yeah.
And so we, because we don't want to let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah, because it hurts the previous sales. And a lot of people always say that when, you know, I've been a part of a lot of different prototypes, and I'm like, it's not the fact, it's because, you know, dealers have all these boats, and that boat, you know, just because we have a prototype, we might not have an actual kayak for months down the road. But then right there, everybody's like, well, I'm not buying the four then. You know, they might have a deposit on one. So a dealer would be like, what the heck, man? You guys just cost me a sale. They're like, I just seen Steven in a new one. I'm going to wait for it.
Yeah. And the flip side of that is sometimes the prototypes are ugly and sometimes they suck.
Yeah, so it's like, exactly.
Like if people see you paddling a bad boat and all of a sudden it's like, whoa, Steven can't even roll that thing. Man, like, there's no way I'm looking forward to that boat. But they're heavy. And so like when we took that final prototype and we had Clay and Nick and Dane and I down here in Columbus when no one was around, we grabbed a 2014 Rockstar, we grabbed a 2016, we grabbed a 4.0, and we all just swapped out with the prototype. And the first day, even though the prototype weighed 40 pounds because it's a prototype boat and all the others were only 30 pounds, we still all got our best tricks out of the prototype, out of the V. We're like, man, we really like that, but some things were just harder. So the next day I took, I think it was like four Nalgenes full of water and strapped them into all of the other boats so they all weighed 40 pounds. and then we paddled them all, and the main thing we learned was that heavy boats suck.
Yeah, I can imagine after coming out of those light ones. What a great spot too, to have a wave like that with good spot where you could film, you could do back-to-back rotations right there. Did you ever live up at Rock Island? Did you ever live there? Yeah,
I lived there for a lot of years, probably more, almost like 10 years before Columbus sort of built the Whitewater Park here.
That brings me to another question for you. What's one of your favorite spots? You know, I'm maybe Columbus, but one of your favorite kind of freestyle spots as far as in the U.S. Like, where do
So freestyle in the U.S. It's hard to beat Columbus. I mean, the Ottawa is not really the U.S. That'd be Canada, but it's not too far from the U.S. Yeah, right, there's really fun holes in Colorado, but I mean, I can have an equally good day creek boating or river running or squirt boating or play boating. So it would be hard to say that I like the Ottawa better than Toxaway. I mean, you know, they're just so different. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
it's hard to say because what mood am I in that day?
Yeah. And sometimes I think if I look back on the last 10 years, if you were to say, what was your best day kayaking that year? I bet three of them might have been squirt boating, just doing mystery moves.
Yeah, you love your squirt boats. You and Clay.
I bet at least five.
Are you and Clay related, by the way? Both of you guys are
not
right.
Okay. We're not.
Yeah, I know everyone you spell thinks, it different.
Everyone thinks we're brothers, but we're
well,
not.
We're clearing that up right now. I remember when I first heard of both of you guys, you know, I was like, that's probably Clay's brother, you know, because yeah. I know he's older than you. So I was like, it's probably Clay's little brother that's getting into kayaking when I first yeah. heard your last name. So no relation for everybody out there that you guys are not related.
Well, no, also, but occasionally Wade, someone has asked me if Clay was my dad.
Oh, and was Clay standing there?
A couple times he was, and it made my day. It was so awesome.
He's not that much older, but I get it. That's funny. Well, awesome, man. You know, and also another thing, what, you know, I noticed you've changed paddles here lately. I know you've been kind of on board of the AT for back as far as like AT paddles have been around. What are you using right now? Is it that G Power?
Yep. Yeah. It's the G Power, harpoon.
Okay.
And it is literally, they probably wouldn't admit it, but it is an AT2 blade copy down to the T. Like Rachel had a AT2 super light and we held them up next to each other and the blades were like literally identical in every way. Yeah. The only difference was they put these grooves in the power face. The shaft is a little different on the G Power. It's probably a little smaller overall.
Is yours bent? Do you use bent or straight shaft?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do. And the G Power is definitely lighter than the ATs.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But I really like bent, especially in bigger water. It's just easier to keep the paddle oriented right in my hands when there's a lot of force on the blade.
You know, I had, that's a topic that I've been, went around, you know, I was just down in Columbus and I brought my Lettman out and I have a Select Player, which is a straight shaft. I like it for like splats and downriver kind of freestyle stuff. That doesn't matter as much, but I know exactly what you mean in those like very forceful environments. I love having the bend. Is that what you're kind of getting to? And I was like, there's something to that, man, because that's a common question. I'm sure you get that a lot. Should I get a straight shaft or a bent shaft?
Yeah. And you can, I think you can do anything with anything. Like, yeah. I don't think it's like, I know plenty of great paddlers that use both. I really like that. It's with my eyes closed. It is really easy to make sure the paddle is always exactly right in my hands. I feel like I don't have to grip it quite as hard to mm-hmm. keep it oriented right. And I had, when I used a straight shaft paddle for a bunch of years, I started getting really bad wrist tendonitis.
Exactly. Yeah.
And when I switched to a bent shaft, it literally went away within 2 days. And
there's something to that. There is something to that. After a long session, I'll get pain like in my wrist and my forearms just feel like they're blowing out. Like they're mm-hmm. just so blown out where I feel like I could go forever when I've got a bent shaft like that. And, you know, looking at the amount of people that use it, you know, I know Dane uses them, Nick uses them, you use them, Clay uses them, EJ uses them. Like, when you look at, like, all the people that use them, especially for freestyle, you know, you're like, maybe there is something to these bent shafts.
Yeah. Yeah. I use it for everything. Like, I like it creek boating. I like it
yeah.
river running, like, you know, taking an antics down the gully or whatever. Like I just like using the same paddle for everything.
Yeah.
You've used all kinds of paddles.
I'll switch back and forth a lot. And I like a straight shaft. Sometimes if I'm on like, say like, you know, a Toxaway or a Whitewater Creek or something like that, where I'm taking a lot of impacts. Number one, I just don't want to break my bent shafts. And you mm-hmm. don't need that finesse paddling as we in the Southeast, we're hitting more rocks. So mm-hmm. I want just an old beater Warner Surge. And yeah. because how many paddle strokes are we taking on the Thompson, for God's sakes?
Yeah. Or on like Suck Creek.
Yeah. We're more paddle placement and hope we don't break it.
Like pushing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to use my good G Power for that or anything.
Yeah.
Well, awesome, man. What else was I going to, what's one of the harder like freestyle tricks that's for you that you think was for you to learn, you personally? Like, is there a trick out there? Is there a holy grail of a trick? I know the double rotation, obviously. You probably
I think a lot of the combos are that just ups the game for any trick. But what I really, really like about kayaking, and especially trying to play a little bit, even if it's downriver play or, you know, wave surfing play, is that it seems like there's just always something to learn. And it's always something to work on. And I mean, a good example of that is like, I bet I got, I don't know, 20 to 30 days on the upper gully for like 15 years in a row. And I did a lot of those in playboats. And then the Antix 2 came out. And all of a sudden, there were certain things I could do that I had never thought of doing on the gully before, yeah. Even in a playboat.
Like, that's and it so was crazy. Like,
yeah, it's like, oh my gosh, like all of a sudden there's new fun to be had on the same old river just because like a new boat is allowing me to try new stuff. And all of a sudden that, you know, running pillow, for example, like, you know, there's several easy lines where the goal is just to stay upright. And then there's like some playboat lines where you might surf a wave and do a kickflip or a macho move or try cartwheels in the room, yeah, or whatever. But then I get in the Antix and all of a sudden it's like, oh man, I'm going to try to get two spins on my stern and this little eddy like right at the top. And then I'm going to surf the wave. And then I'm going to ferry across this thing behind this one rock and try to get a stern squirt pirouette to the right. And then I'm going to come out the other side, yeah, and stern squirt pirouette to the left. And then I'm going to catch the room. And then I'm going to surf the room. And it's like all of a sudden.
Where in a rock star, those moves aren't attainable because you don't have that upstream momentum. You might pull them off. But it's
they
like
would be they would be attainable, but spinning around on the stern is just less fun in a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the like wave wheels, kick flips, macho moves are way more fun in the rock star. So they're just like different branches of the, yeah, same tree. Like you have a different tool and you're able to like just sort of be creatively exploring and having fun in different ways, if that, yeah, makes sense.
When I go to the gully, I'll have a full slice, a half slice, and a longboat. And
yeah.
Every one of them will get paddled over like one weekend because you're right. It's each one has its own thing. People ask me, I was like, yeah, you know, I'm not out here in a full slice because I love the half slice is so good out here on the gully. And then, mm-hmm, the next day I'm just in a longboat doing attainments and speed moves. You're right. I mean, I could see that, you know.
Yeah, and I think with any of the boats where people are playing around vertically, whether it's a full slice, half slice, playboat, like those skills just make every day on the river more fun, whether, yeah, you're creek boating, river running, surfing, whatever, because you're just learning to boss the boat around.
Yeah.
And different boats are easier to boss around in different ways. And, yeah, so that pays huge dividends when you're creek boating and all of a sudden you find yourself vertical you for whatever reason. And you're like, oh, I know what this feels like. Like I've
getting stern squirted for me on a creek boat does not bother me. I'll just rotate it around, lay it down and go.
Yeah, like, exactly. You're like, I know what this feels like. I can do this.
He's barking at Mason. He's scary.
Oh yeah. Well, he scares people when you know when you're against them. That's for sure. I'd be scared too if I was entering a rodeo, then Mason showed up. I'd be like, oh.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I've got a pricing structure I've got to tell you about. It's like reverse sponsorship for dream boats. So okay, most sponsorship deals work out where if someone's really, really, really good, you might give them a deal because they're going to make your boat look good. Right.
Okay.
My boats, if someone is an average kayaker, okay, they're going to pay $3,000 full price. If someone, as they become, if they're better, more likely to beat me and make me look bad, they're going to have to pay more. So the best kayakers are going to have to pay a lot of money. So if someone's like, you know, kind of right on the edge of making me feel bad about my skills, they're going to, yeah, have to pay like $4,000. If they're like Mason, and they regularly make me feel bad. That's, yeah, like a $5,000 kayak. Yeah. If Dane wants one, it's 10 freaking grand. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the dream boat fine. Yeah.
This Stephen Wright reverse sponsorship pricing structure.
Good luck with that one. Yeah, well, I can see that. Well, that's awesome, man. Well, I know you do a lot of like teaching and guiding, and especially down there. What is that would bring me to a question. What would you recommend, like maybe your top three or five like things for a new paddler to get better? I get that question a lot. I'm sure you do. They're like, what could I do, you know, and I to get better, you know, besides taking a class with you?
You got it. Number one, the big picture is always try challenging things in easy and safe places.
Okay.
So, and I actually asked Dane once how you become Dane. And he said that literally every single day he's working on something he's not good at. Like literally every single time he kayaks.
And, like, and us on the outside looking in being like, and what's that?
Yeah. And so I was like, so what are you working on tomorrow? And he's like, well, I want to learn how to super clean stern squirt my antics. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Like, I've not made it there yet.
Yeah. But I think that's the thing to know is, like, new kayakers, don't just do whatever's comfortable and what you've done before. Mm-hmm. Always be trying new stuff. Okay. My top three or four skills. Number one, nothing will pay off more than learning to have a good forward stroke. Mm. 99% of your time in a kayak will be spent doing forward strokes. If you get twice as good at it, you are almost twice as good of a kayaker. Nothing else is going to pay off like that. Get okay. really good at doing a very, very good forward stroke.
Okay.
I would say number two, people need to spend a lot of intentional time learning how to brace on both sides, develop good balance with the boat on edge, and be able to roll fast every time in a lot of different
What's
ways.
Your go-to row? C to C, sweep, back deck?
Whatever I do, I think of almost just like a hip snap roll, where a lot of Me times too. I just kind of like, I get my head to the surface and just slice the blade anywhere I get a little bit of purchase, and then think just hip snap and don't really worry about the setup. If I upside down and by the time I realize what's going on, I'm on the back deck, which happens half the time, I'll just back deck roll up. If I flip over and I'm leaning forward, I could do something like a C to C or whatever.
What would you recommend, like, new people? What's the go-to row? Like, say I'm Joe Schmo that just started.
I think it's easiest to learn kind of that C to C or sweep motion. But I think most people should focus most of their energy on getting the most efficient hip snap possible. Okay. So that whatever they're doing with their paddle just won't matter as much. So when I teach, like, bomb-proof your roll classes, I focus hard on getting people to, like, wind up their hip snap by getting their head all the way to the surface, and then do the whole hip snap without using any upper body strength, and then finish low looking at the blade. And it's like, I don't care how they set up to do that. It's mm-hmm. like, I just want them to be good at that piece, because I think that makes or breaks almost every roll. You okay. know what I mean?
So forward strokes, and then your number two was, like, learn your edge control or bracing, like doing your bracing and edge control and rolls.
What yeah, would you balance, say edge three? Control, rolling, bracing, that stuff would be a good one. And then I think a lot of people, if they've got like a playful kayak, or even if they don't, find safe rocks and play with them.
Yes, I agree with that.
That's a great one, because you have to, like, learning to kind of splat or even just drive a creek boat up onto rocks in safe places is going to teach people to boss the boat around.
I call it's that gonna, southeast hips.
Yeah, it's going to teach them timing, yeah. like force. It's going to teach them how to deal when the boat is interacting with rocks. It's going to teach you that it's okay if you're upside down yeah. against a rock. You don't have to just panic and swim. You can just, like, deal with it and roll up. And I think it helps people learn things like boofing and yeah. all kinds of things, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's something to that, like getting your hips and weight up on rocks. Like, when I see people that you have too, I'm sure you'll be out paddling with somebody and you'll see a rock and we'll just kind of, like, jump right over it, boink, right over it, and I watch these people just paddle up and stop dead, and they yeah. just don't, and then they flip.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, you've got to kind of like hip check it, like get up over the rock, you know, a rock yeah. that's kind of dry. Yeah,
yeah.
That's pretty good right there. What about number? So that's your third. You got a fourth and fifth for me?
Oh man, I don't know. So we got good forward stroke. We got balance, rolling and bracing. Play with safe rocks. That's a good one. And then I would say overall, big picture is just always be trying something you're not good at. Don't be afraid to look stupid. Always have a skill you're working on. And yeah. never be afraid to ask for feedback from people who can do things you can't.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't do a lot of unsolicited advice, and you're probably the same way, but if you ask, if anybody's ever asked you, you've been really cool about it. Like, yeah, I can see what you're doing is not doing this. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and, like, the best paddlers have no trouble asking each other yeah. for help. It's like, Dane, why is my air screw doing this and yours is doing that? And he'll be like, well, your head is too far this way and you're not there and you're doing this. And I'm like, I hate you. My air screws are great. Leave me alone.
I thought, yeah. I mean, even he started somewhere, right? Yeah. So everybody's, you got a number 5 for everybody?
I don't know if I have a number 5. Yeah.
Well, technically, your number 2 had about 6 in it.
So. It's true. They all had a lot. They all had a lot. Hey, yeah. I would say overall for attitude. I would say to know that everybody's fun is equally valid.
Yeah. I never try. Anybody's on class 2 having fun, I'm giving them high fives. I'm happy for them. I don't care. Yeah.
Whether your friend is having the time of their life in a half slice on the Nantahala, what's going on is they're in their brain. If you took a brain scan of that stoke, it's going to be exactly the same as the guy like Bennett Smith running a 50-foot waterfall. It's going to be exactly the same as the person who gets their first ever air loop. It's going to be exactly the same as a person running the upper gully for the first time. Yep. Like all the goal of all kayaking needs to be getting us into that joy space that makes us better human beings.
Yeah, I've always said that it's kind of subjective. You know, that stoke is subjective to you. You know, you might just somebody getting that ferry for the first time and nailing it. You've probably seen it. They're over there cheering in the high fives in the eddy because they got a good ferry.
You know, I think the most fun I ever had in a kayak might have been the very first day I ever went paddling. And I did nothing but like...
It's hard to get that back.
Yeah, like peel out below the Maryland chute on the Potomac and like paddle the tiny little wave train. And my mind was just like blown. It was like, oh my gosh, this is so awesome. How could this be here the whole time and no one told me? The world is so much cooler.
Oh, that's so hard to get back. And I think you kind of get that back when someone else does it for the first time. And I think that's why I like helping people out like that. Well, that's awesome, man. How can people get a hold of you for the dream boats or the like any type of instructional? How can people get a hold of you?
Good question. Send me a message on Facebook. Dream Boats has Facebook and Instagram. I personally just have Facebook. You can also email me at Stephen@JacksonKayak.com. If you have feedback on any Jackson Kayak kind of stuff, definitely hit me up, hit up Emily, Clay, Dane, Nick. Like we really, really, really want to make the best boats we can. And if you've got ideas, we want to hear them. And we're going to try all the boats and make whatever we think is the most fun. And
that's whitewater. You do fishing too?
We don't do fishing.
You don't.
Emily does actually.
I know Jameson is he does all the fishing stuff. Do you do any design on the fishing?
I don't.
Okay. So you didn't have anything, the Kusa X or the NAR or anything like that? Okay.
No, I know that those boats are awesome, but I do not have any expertise in terms of working on them.
Okay. Well, Stephen, man, I appreciate you, dude. Thanks a lot for stopping in and chatting with me. I've been wanting to kind of talk to you for a while, and I appreciate you, man. And good luck with the whole Dream Boats thing. And I'm definitely a fan. I'll definitely be back down Columbus, and hopefully you can have one ready because I want to give one a whirl.
Oh, yeah, you do. Come on back soon. Hopefully, we'll have a test boat ready to paddle in a couple of weeks. So when
awesome, dude. Down. Well, that's sooner than I thought. Yeah, I got to get back in shape. I'm running already. All right, we'll see you, man. All right, thanks a lot, Stephen. All right, see you
on the river.
All right, bye.